Welcome to 2025 and the Yoga Therapy Hour. As most of you know, we are taking the year of 2025 for the most part to have people tell their stories of health and healing and beyond as they experience yoga and yoga therapy and Ayurveda. And our first guest of the year is Susie Hately. I'm sure many of you know her from her business, Functional Synergy. And she has a YouTube channel that is fabulous. It has so much information on biomechanics and how to take care of your body. She's a major athlete. And in this episode, you'll hear her story coming full circle from being such a great athlete and such a great teacher of the biomechanics and kinesiology, and how she came to understand the importance of rest and recovery and working towards a state of being and a way of living that we're not on empty and feeling depleted all of the time, and how important that is, and that rest is kind of a revolutionary act. So I was also working with some of my students earlier this morning, and we came to the same understanding through our discussions. And one of them said something to the effect of feeling safe in your body, feeling good in your body is a revolutionary act. And so one of the things that a friend of mine named Colleen has said to me, and I really take it to heart, is how do we set up our lives so that we're feeling better more of the time, or even feeling good most of the time? That the value is I want to stay regulated. I want to feel good as much as possible, knowing that life will have challenges and conflicts and things will come up and we'll have periods of stress. But in general, I want to kind of create a life for myself where I can feel good as much as possible. And then from that value, let the structure of how we live our lives and the choices we make and the jobs we say yes to or no to and the habits that we create around morning routine or evening routine, that all of that stems from that value of wanting to feel better more of the time. That's revolutionary. What most people are doing, including some of us, is looking externally for cues on how to live our lives, how we can be happy, how we can be healthy, how we can feel better. Maybe I'll grasp at that and try that. Maybe they have an idea and I can try that. And we're going out to find the answers instead of coming inward to find the answers. So I think that's one thing that yoga and yoga therapy train us to do, is to learn to kind of reorganize the inner landscape in a way that will eventually reorganize the outer landscape of our lives. So in this episode, Susie and I talk about how technology, like the Garmin watch, like the Oura ring, like the Lumen breathalyzer, how these technologies can give us the data to help us understand what's happening in our system and start to match up. Oh, my watch or my ring or my Lumen said this. Oh, that's what that sensation is. That's my body being with poor heart rate variability, or that's my body expelling too much carbon dioxide because I'm super stressed out or I didn't get enough sleep. So that's where technology can interface with the experience of being human to help us understand what these inner sensations actually are. And then from that, instead of being, you know, so connected to the technology that we have to do everything it tells us, it's not that. We learn about our inner landscape and how to reorganize it. And then eventually, how to do the revolutionary act of allowing yourself the opportunity to rest and to feel good. So I think you're going to love this episode of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I know I did. And Susie is so smart and so empathetic and so tuned in on so many layers. The subtlety with which she can explain these things is really, really great. So let's get into the episode, and I hope you like it as much as I did. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Season 8. At the end of 2024, I was reflecting on our 2.5 years together. Each and every season, I want to bring something new, something fresh and interesting. So in season 8, starting in January of 2025, we are going to tell stories. I'm asking you, yes, you, to come on the podcast and tell your story of health, healing, and beyond as it applies to yoga therapy, and Ayurveda. How did these things help you to heal on the physical level, chronic level, the mental or emotional level, or even spiritual level? Maybe all of the above. So come on down. It's your turn to be on the podcast, and we would love to have you join us in 2025 telling your story of how you healed. Welcome, Susie, to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks so much. This is a great pleasure. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Where are you joining us from?
So I am in at this time of recording in the very cold Nordic Canada of Calgary. So I am in the snowy winter right now.
I'm in the snowy winter in Minnesota.
Nice.
Probably not quite as cold as you, but. So, Susie, in 2025, I had made a decision that I wanted to talk to real people about how yoga or yoga therapy or related modalities had helped them to heal themselves. And so we're really talking about the stories of being human and how did we come to yoga? I think we each have our own story. So do you have a story? And would you be willing to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. As I was thinking about this episode, something that really sort of stood out for me is while I came to yoga because I had pain, like the real healing that yoga provided me was actually more recently. So what brought me into yoga, I was in my early-ish mid-20s and I had had a bunch of physical pain from accidents or injuries as a teenage athlete. And they were just kind of hanging around. And I was a new grad out of university. I didn't have much money, so I couldn't really go to all the people to get help. And my roommate said, "You know, you really should try yoga." And I remember being in the room and like at the yoga, it was at a church and looking around, and I had been an athlete, so I was like, "This is weird. Like, this is just weird. I'm on
What kind
stand."
of athlete were you?
I was a lot. I was a downhill skier. I was a lightweight rower. I was a runner. I did a lot. I did a lot of different things. I did triathlons for a while. And before the teacher came over to me, she said, "You really need to soften your hard feet." And I'm like, "What?" Anyway, but at the same time, even though I'm like, "Does anyone else think this is weird?" And I remember a light bulb moment going off for me. Like, it was just something about this, even as weird as it seemed. And I went back the next week and the next week, and I still is amongst the people waiting for the church doors to open, thinking, clearly everybody knows this is as strange as I do. But I kept going back, and I've been in a lot of pain for about 2 years. And within 4 months, I was back running a 10K pain-free. And so I was sort of onto something. And so I think because it was such a quick win for me in all, and I got back to what I was doing, and I sort of let running go, and I got weighed into yoga, and I did all those things that lots of times we do when we feel the benefit of a practice. I also was working in a chronic pain center. So that was my job. And I started to integrate what I was learning in the class to what was in my job because I had graduated with a biomechanics kinesiology degree and was working in a multidisciplinary rehab center. And people got better faster. So I had this experience of like my own world improving, but also my clientele world improving. And that just sort of kind of moved forward. And my own process was kind of done at that point. And it really became about my client and my students' processes. And I never really got into yoga because I'm like, how do you make a living at it? And I just kind of kept going, did my teacher training and just sort of kept going and just sort of like organically got into teaching, and more people with pain came to me. And it was sort of that kind of was what it was. Yoga's always been a constant companion, both from a physical standpoint, and it was just something I loved to do. But it really wasn't until this summer, like summer of 2024, that it really struck home.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Before we go into the recent one, I have so many questions about the first
Sure.
one.
Sure. Yeah.
Sorry, I
Yeah.
have to go back there. I'm a very curious person. So, knowing what you know now,
Yes.
what do you think happened when you were in that church and you were looking around trying to soften your feet and you knew it was a little weird? But what do you think was happening to you during that 4 month period with the wisdom and knowledge that you have now?
Well, I remember, I have a clear memory of going out for a run and just deciding, you know, I'm going to do 1 minute on, 1 minute off, and being sort of stunned, like noticing a thought and then being like, wow, I actually thought that. Okay. And so I think what had happened is, whether it was me slowing down or trusting something, because as an athlete, I was very good at putting the blinders on and going. Anyone who knows rowing as a sport, that sport is you pull like heck until you go through the finish line. And like, it's just blinders on and pull. So I wasn't pushing through as much. And then I think out of not pushing through, some other wisdom sort of bubbled up. And I started doing these 1 minute on, 1 minute offs. And then I remember, you know what? I think I'm going to run. Let's see what happens if I run to that fire hydrant and stop. And then do, I don't know if whether it was a warrior one or a triangle or a something, and then go off and run again. And maybe only run as long as my breathing feels easy. Or, and there's some cueing or some instructions that the teacher had been providing that I'm like, huh, what happens when I do this when I run? Like, there was just this curiosity of awareness that started to percolate in. And I even recall when I started to pick up sort of the length of time that I was running for, that I was really smart about it. Like, there wasn't like, oh, I should do 5 kilometers today. It was more like, I wonder how far I'm going to go today. And then I can always turn around when it's time. Like, it was just such a non-coercive and listening experience. And because I've been an athlete, I was also somewhat aware of my body. So this wasn't totally foreign to me. It was how I was utilizing that awareness that had changed.
You probably have heard of a man named John Douillard, who wrote a book called Body, Mind, and Sport. And he talks in that book about when he trained the athletes to do things like you're talking about, they would at first feel like, oh no, my performance is going to suffer. I'm not training as hard. But in the end, a lot of them ended up actually training better, having less injuries, and actually their performance went up because they weren't overtraining anymore.
Yes. And it's the distinction now, I would say it's the distinction when we're utilizing sort of the prefrontal cortex on the left side, or the amygdala on the left side, as being the driving fuel, versus using more of the right side of, let's like sense into our system. And then we can utilize, it's more like a whole brain process for how we do our movement, or how we do our exercise, or how we do our fitness. The same thing is, I'm on my bike a lot more now. And last year, my family, we went to Italy and did a bike tour in Italy. So a multi-day tour there. And I had a trainer to help me with it. And then one day I just said, you know what, I'm working too hard. And she said, your metrics are fine. I'm like, I'm working too hard. And there was this ability to let her know that even though my metrics look fine, that I can feel when my body was getting tired, which is actually when I didn't have the metrics on my watch, but now I actually have my Garmin watch, shows me other metrics. Like, it shows me heart rate variability, it shows me recoverability, it shows me how I'm sleeping. And when I look at those, it's like, that's what I was sensing into when I was letting her know, sure, the metrics, my recovery rate in this regard look okay, but these other ones are actually suggesting something different. So it was cool to be able to sense into that and be like, oh yeah, like, I completely agree. Cause people are, I'm not sure if they're overworking actually. I think they might be under recovering. There's a nuance there that I think we can play with.
And what I love about what you just said is that because you have the metrics of heart rate variability and, you know, the things that your Garmin is telling you, now you understand that, oh, that sensation is, you know, my heart rate variability is off. Not that you wouldn't still continue to wear your Garmin watch, but I just find that fascinating that something in us is telling us like, oh, something's a little much here. But now we can figure out like, oh, we can trust that.
Yes. And I think it's a big leap for some people, because we have in our culture, the measurements that we use for health need to be so big, right? Like, MRIs and CT scans pick up big things. They don't pick up nuanced things, at least when someone is being asked to have one of those scans. The metrics that are required in what's considered the gold standard of measurement require like you to be quite far along in your trajectory. So to be able to tune into these other sensations so often are considered so quiet, and people might complain, well, they should get louder. And it's like, well, they do get louder, but when they get louder, they're actually really kind of loud. There's a problem. So to be able to listen at a quieter space takes training. And I suspect that's what was happening, is because I already had a level of understanding of my body, it wasn't as big of a leap. And I also was someone that when I felt better, I felt better. I didn't question that I was feeling better. Just, I feel better, so I'm going to go off and do this. It wasn't a big leap. And I think for some people, that trust in themselves can be a leap, can be a leap.
My name is Amy Wheeler, and I am the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I oftentimes get asked, Amy, you've been doing this for 2.5 years now. How can we help support the Yoga Therapy Hour? And there's a few ways. Number one, you can become a Patreon member, and that is on Patreon. You can donate as little as $5 a month to the podcast. But another way that you could help us would be to join our Optimal State mobile app. That too, right now, is about $5 a month. It helps you track your gunas. It gives all sorts of lifestyle medicine suggestions based on yoga and Ayurveda. We have yoga nidras on there. We have Dharma talks on there. So you could actually benefit from getting the app and also help support this podcast at the same time. We hope you'll consider it. Go to the Apple iPhone store, and we hope that you'll download that app and start using it so that you can benefit, and so can we. You know, I want to tell a little bit of my story because it connects so well.
Mm-hmm.
For probably about 6 months, I had been like lifting weights really hard and pushing it and going to group classes and just trying to get in shape again. And I was hobbling around, like my body was in pain. It was not enjoying it, but I was like, I have to get in shape. And then one day I got in the pool instead, and I did a lot of those same movements in the pool.
And
when I came out, I just felt so light, so expansive. I wasn't hobbling around. I called my friend. I'm like, I feel like the prana is flowing. And so I've stayed in the pool for the last 6 months because it feels good. I don't know if I'm, you know, maybe my fitness gains wouldn't look quite as great. Also, is hobbling around, is that a good thing? That's gotta lead to injury at some point, right? So I love this idea that you're talking about of subtle sensations and tuning into them. And how do you feel during? How do you feel after? And that matters. It's not just outcome oriented.
Yes. And when I'm working out and I'm lifting weights, I want to feel better after.
Right.
I don't want to feel destroyed.
Yep.
So I know that it's out there to say, you need to have a certain amount of soreness. Like people will say that. And I don't need to go to fatigue when I'm lifting in order to make the gains that I want to make. And I've seen the change in my body. And it's not that I don't go to fatigue when I lift. It's more that when I notice that my inner world is telling me to stop, I stop. And I haven't hurt myself. I haven't overtrained. I'm not under recovering. Like there's more. It's like a juicy nourishment. Like when I think about Ayurveda, there's more ojas present. I'm not coming into this from a depletion standpoint. Isn't that the point?
Yeah.
In a way, you know, but a lot of people don't think that way, right? Like they want to do a mind over body type of thing and just push, 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 push. And if that's a way, and is it effective? Is it effective? For me, it's not.
Sustainable. It's sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in my mid-50s now. I was an athlete at one time, but I wouldn't say that I am now. And there's no way I could sustain that. So I guess maybe with changes of stages of life too, what we need from our exercise routines might change too.
Totally.
All right. So thank you for taking that little loop back.
Sure.
Now, the summer of 2024, you were just about to say something happened in the summer of 2024.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's so crazy is, you know, when you have those divine moments. So I had an older Garmin watch that I've had for many, many years. And I have this door handle on my bedroom door. It's not a circle. It's sort of a hinge. The reason why I'm saying this is because my watch got hooked on this thing and it broke. The watch band broke. And then I went to try and fix it. And there was no way because it broke right off the console of the watch. And I remember going back to the door handle going, how on earth, like how on earth did my watch get, like it was clearly something that seemed to need to have happened. Because then I got a new Garmin watch. And so all these metrics are on it. I didn't buy it for that purpose, but it was one that was similar. It was one that seemed to have the pieces I did want. And then I discovered it had this heart rate variability. It had sleep metrics. It had a few other things like a recovery. And I just thought, let's take a look. And I discovered that my heart rate variability was way lower than I realized. And my sleep recovery was horrible. And I'm like, huh? No, this couldn't be true. And I remember sharing that with someone who's a trainer and sort of, you know, and I was sort of laughing about it. I wasn't upset, but she said, don't take that stuff seriously. And I'm like, okay, I might not, but what if I did? And so then just for fun, I started to, and it was stunning. It was so stunning because I recognized just where I was, and I was depleted and I was tired. And what had happened, I realized at that point that I was coming out of a phase. My husband is a retired firefighter and he has PTS and hypervigilance from being a firefighter. And there are episodes that he goes through, and I have come to a place where some of them were dark. Some of them were really, really dark. And we've got young kids together. They're now 7. They're a set of twins. And he was safe. Like, they weren't in harm's way. So it wasn't anything of that sort. But being a mama bear, I was on the lookout. And so I was being vigilant on his behalf. So I could see, and I could see the whispers of an episode coming. And so then I would kind of buffer the household, and then the episode would happen and onward we would go. And it was just sort of this wave of in and out. And I was just doing my thing. I was doing what I had to do. And then I got my watch and I realized, oh, maybe you're struggling. And it was interesting because around that time, he had become more stable, both physiologically and psychologically, with some work he was doing with a counselor trained in working with first responders. And then it was like, okay, how do I let go? I realized that's what I had to do. And I had no idea how to do it. So I'm like, okay, let's just start. Cause I couldn't logically let go. Like, that wasn't available. And I sort of knew that it wasn't available, but of course I tried that anyway, even though I clearly knew that wasn't possible. And I just decided to focus on my sleep and focus on my rest and focus on maybe I'm under recovering and start playing in that regard. And what was interesting is my metrics changed very, very, very rapidly. Like, it was kind of like being at the yoga space, like at the church, where I had very rapid change in a matter of weeks. My heart rate variability was way up back into like what was supposed to be considered normal. And it was balanced and my sleep scores were way better. I had much better sleep. My sleep regime was way better. And I wasn't getting kind of like grippy about it. I was kind of taking on the process from a very curious standpoint. I got into a lot of yoga nidra, did a lot, a lot of yoga nidra. And if I had had a poor sleep and I woke up not quite on it, I would, like, yoga nidra was the first thing I would do. And I already had a pretty regular pranayama practice, but that just became more locked into my day. And I started noticing those times where I would get distracted and where I would get distracted to. And I would be like noticing, oh, that's actually when I need to be doing something like going for a walk or taking a pranayama or doing something of that sort. And again, it was just a matter of another few weeks and things just kind of kept snowballing in a positive way, where it became this consistent conversation in our household about like rest days and rest breaks. And the kids started to kind of pick up on needing rest, or they just started to become a conversation, and then became a conversation with my husband. And we got him an Aura ring and this thing that's now a thing. That's not a thing. It's not like a thing. There's this ebb and this flow now that has become very much a part of our life. For me, I can really tell when it's an under recovery as opposed to an overworking. Like, there's a nuance to that, because when I recover well, there's not this like neediness to do something, whether it's a neediness to produce or a neediness to exercise or whatever. Like, there's not this like kind of grippy thing that's happening. And that's, I think, if I was in that energy too much. Like I think about some of the athletes I've worked with who might consider be overtrained. It's what's the fuel that's driving the training regimen. And what I often see, and this was before I went through my process, what I will often see is it's not so much the overwork, but it's the under recovery. And if they can get that recovery, then they don't tend to do all that work, right? Right. Which is different if they just stop doing the work. Because I think if they stop doing the work, they wouldn't get the necessary recovery bit. And then they would be like vibrating, needing to do more, right? But then when they get the recovery piece in place, everything just clear out so much of the allostatic load. They clear out so much of that extra physiological wear and tear.
Ooh. Okay. So
you let me go for a while there.
No, I love it. And I want to make sure it's okay that we're speaking of your husband without his.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's He knew I was going to do this.
Plus, I think that the audience sometimes is like, oh, did they get consent?
Yes. Yes, we do.
The yoga therapist not getting consent. That's good. But this other piece about adding in rest.
Yeah.
It's different than just not pushing yourself. I don't think people tease that apart enough like you have for us today.
Yes.
Because in my experience, if I decide, okay, I'm just not going to train as much or I'm not going to push myself so hard, I'll just fill that void with some other overactivity, overwork, overeat, over this, over that. Like being in that restful void is not always comfortable. It feels sometimes like you're being a little lazy and why aren't you producing? And so just saying I'm not going to do one thing is very different than being really intentional as you and your family are with putting in rest days, putting in yoga nidras and prioritizing that and saying that rest is an important activity that we spend time doing. And, you know, we don't do it because it makes us more productive. I mean, that would be kind of strange. But it actually does make us a better version of ourselves.
Yeah, but here's the crazy thing. There's a book actually called Rest. That in that book, the author's premise is that you will become more creative and more productive the more rest you have. And he documents historical figures who took copious amounts of rest and what they were able to produce when they rested more. So there is actually more that can be produced. And a couple of ways to think about it is when you were saying, like when you don't do something, you might do something else. And there's two pieces to that. One is, and this is something I clearly felt, I did stop doing stuff and I let myself vibrate. Like I let myself be in the absolute uncomfortable, wired state. And out of that, that's when I really understood I was so vigilant. Like I was having my own hypervigilance relative to his state. But because I could see that he was becoming more physiologically and psychologically stable, it was like, okay, I can actually retrain this. And I actually then took that was really my process for a number of weeks was this retraining process. And knowing that my hypervigilance wasn't anxiety, it was just being very alert to when things were going to go sideways with him. And I could recognize that that alertness was very much of a strength, but it was now starting to become depleting to me and it would become less serving to me and to my family. So there was a compelling reason. What I also told myself was, okay, I don't love this vibrating feeling right now. So we could actually be clear. We could be clear and not alert. And you can still respond when you see an episode coming. So you don't have to be on it because you now know, because this is me talking to myself. It's like, you now know all of these things. You now know the signs. So you've got this. And so I was sort of talking myself down a little bit, but it was when I started adding the yoga nidra in, and I've always been a lover of nidra, but I ramped it up in a major way and started playing a lot around with opposites of like, what does vigilance feel like? And what's the opposite of vigilance? And the words that came to me, I can't remember them all, but some of them are like, seriously, like that's the opposite. And I allowed the wisdom in me to say, yeah, this is the opposite. Work with these as opposites and then be with both. And that was kind of mind-blowing in terms of really shifting my physiology around what was possible. So I'm a true believer that we can retrain this when there's a stable state over here. Yeah. And even when he's had episodes since, but now it's like, oh, look, that's happening. And I can let him know. And I'm letting him know from a, hey, guess what? I'm noticing this is happening. And he might diss it. He might not. But it's like, hey, you know what? I'm noticing this is happening. But it's coming from a totally different space. And so because I'm in a different space, the whole family is in a different space too. There's clarity. And I'll just add one little thing. And I want to emphasize that sometimes when we move out of these, it can be so scary because that survival strategy has served for so long, but it doesn't mean you don't have the skill that's in behind it, right? That alertness, like alertness can become clarity versus vigilance. Yeah.
This must be the topic of the day. I work with the Polyvagal Institute that Stephen Porges has started, and we have these pods where we get together with 8 to 10 people and we kind of talk through material. And this was the topic for 90 minutes this morning.
Cool.
What do you do when your family members, kids, partner, you know, whatever, are basically unstable and not regulated? And how do we not allow them to destabilize and deregulate us and put us in hypervigilance, but rather somehow we can hold the space for ourselves, our families, and possibly even our stability might co-regulate them?
Yes. And I wouldn't do it for that purpose.
Right. Right.
I think there's such a desire of like, oh, if I can just get this myself, then they'll change.
Yeah.
And I could feel those. And I'm like, yeah, I get that, Susie. And then I just like, just keep doing it. Just, this is for you.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of, this is for you being a mom to your kids, right? Like there was a little bit of that that was compelling me, but it's true. Once I got to a certain point, my calmness and clarity fed the stability that he has. Clearly, very, very, very clearly. It's a lot of work. And I have a colleague of mine. She feels that she needs to stay in hypervigilance because a member of her family needs her to be that. Like that's her current perception, which I'm not saying is right or wrong. It's just that's a reality, right? And so the conversation has been, what can you do to support yourself? If this is where you feel you need to be, if this is what the right answer is for you now, how do you support yourself so you can still maintain your OGIS, that you can still kind of be in that space? Yeah. Cause I think if someone had said something like that to me earlier on, but if they even brought that to my attention, I'd be like, no, there's no way. I'm the one who's the glue. And what you're asking me to be is to unglue. And no one even mentioned that to me, but looking back on that, it's like, I had to come to a place and the watch helped me come to that place. I had to see it and go, wow, like no way. I do yoga. Like I'm me. Like this can't be so. And then have the willing, right. But have the willingness to go, but hey, what happens if it is so? Like truly, this could only help me improve and become a better version of myself. So let's go. And it has. Like it's awesome. It's awesome.
Susie, I have a confession. A couple of years ago, I got an Apple Watch and it was the early days of watches and heart rate variability. So I don't know how accurate it was. This is what I tell myself. I had an 11 one day. My heart rate variability was an 11.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
As a yoga therapist, I was like, wow. But like you, that was the wake up call. And it was 2 weeks later where I was in the 60s and 70s, which is great, you know, and it was shocking to me how well putting rest and different yoga tools into my day, how quickly it flipped my physiology. Yeah. Like I was in awe of our toolbox.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Things can change. And so as someone with hypervigilance, it's kind of like that heart rate variability is low and it's like robotic. That's the way that it looks like. It's almost flatlining in terms of like death, but like robot heart rate variability because there's not any movement. And as I started talking more about my process with heart rate variability and sharing with my husband around, hey, you know what? I'm actually being vigilant on your state. And that kind of opened up some really interesting dialogue between the two of us. Then he started to kind of like go, what about this heart rate variability? And then started to do more breathing during his day. And again, like in a matter of a few weeks, his was starting to like get at least some of this happening. And now he's thrilled that I think he's been up at like 40 or something. But he also feels different, right?
Right.
It's stunning, even for the non-yogis of the crowd. Things can change quite dramatically. That's what's so cool about these metrics, right? Or we can kind of play into, what does this actually feel like? So now my watch also has the sleep metrics of deep sleep and REM sleep. And I can now feel what it feels like when I've got good deep sleep, what it feels like when I've got good REM. And sometimes I have good deep, but not good REM. It's so fun for me to see, like I can tell in some cases, not all cases. So sometimes it's just you had a night, whatever. And in other cases, it's like, it wouldn't surprise me if, right? And not to kind of like, oh, I bet I'm not going to have a good sleep. Like, it's not like that kind of. When I wake up in the morning and I look at it, I'm like, yeah, I bet my numbers are going to be like this morning. And I follow my day and I follow what I feel. I don't follow my numbers. I follow what I feel. And then I notice what my numbers are. And then there's some interesting validation and some interesting just like, oh, whatever. And it's not like, I'm not so tightened to them. It's just another interesting metric. It's an interesting conversation and dialogue I get to have with myself.
We've gone down this technology road today. So I want to ask about the Oura ring and how that my friend Amy has one and loves it. And how is that similar or different to the watch? And then I just want to touch on something called Lumen. That's a breath you blow into it and it gives you a lot of feedback that I've been using for the last few months. So let's start with the Oura ring. How is that different than like a Garmin watch or an Apple watch?
So from the Garmin that I have has heart rate variability, at least the metrics that I'm utilizing, and there might be other ones on there, but it's got heart rate variability, sleep, recovery rate, training readiness. Yeah, I think that's it. Whereas the Oura ring, and I think I could put on it, like you should move now, but I don't have that one. I don't need that one. With my husband's Oura ring, he's got, there's more nuance in the heart rate variability and there's more during the day that he can see that. I think mine is mostly at night. He's got more metrics around how his energy is being utilized. So there's just more nuance. There's more data that he can dive into if he wants to. I've pondered getting an Oura ring and I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm good with what I've got, but who knows, maybe I'll nerd out and do that. For the Garmin watch that I have, which I think is called the 265, I think the Oura has got more data. I've heard of Lumen, but I haven't used it. So tell me about Lumen.
Lumen can be used for a number of different purposes, but it's basically measuring throughout the day. You can do it as many times as you want, the amount of CO2 that you're expelling. And it tells you a ratio of how much carbs you're burning versus fat. You know, there's this Facebook group that everybody's complaining, like, I'm eating the perfect diet. I'm on keto and blah, blah, blah. And they cannot figure out why their Lumen scores are not good. And it's because they're stressed out. And because probably their heart rate variability is horrible. Everyone thinks that nutrition and dieting is calories in, calories out. And they think if you eat the proper macros that you're going to lose weight and you're going to feel great. No, the Lumen has showed me and so many others how important our state of mind and anxiety and hypervigilance and sleep. People eat perfectly, but if they haven't slept, they get a horrible Lumen score. In the Facebook group are really frustrated by this because they want to have control over their diet and they ate their 120 grams of protein. And it's kind of amusing for me to watch as a yoga therapist.
Yeah.
How little people are really understanding about our state of being from the perspective of heart rate variability and just feeling good, and that the aim is to feel good, not necessarily to meet your macros. You see what I mean?
Yes. I was in a neuroscience program that talks a lot about numbers and data. And I would say that the majority of people in that group are looking at the research from a very left brain perspective. Mm-hmm. And what's the research saying I should do now? And one of the trainers is really great in saying, you are an N equals one. And the research is the root, but it's like the clinical relevance when you're working with a client. It's like, does that research really matter for this particular person that we're working with? And the answer could be yes, it could be no. So it's the same thing with us, that it's still our experience that is what matters. And the numbers are interesting. And I actually had a client, he got a super highfalutin Garmin watch a few years ago, and he freaked out because by the time it was 10 in the morning, his body battery score was like tanked. And I said to him, yesterday, you were fine. And today you're not. Same sort of, you're the same dude. I coached him saying, pretend that the numbers are wrong. Like, pretend that the watch is wrong. Like, just pretend. Then how would you take that information? And then let's pretend then the numbers are right. Now, how would you take that information? Like, what's happening in the first part of your day that's leading to this number? And can you hold this just a bit lighter, right? So then it's not something that the numbers are displaying something that is wrong with you. They're simply displaying numbers. In my work, I do a lot of like looking at people's body movement patterns and are you compensating or are you not? Like, is your arm bone moving or is it not? Are you breathing or are you not? Like, to me, it's all just like, are you doing it? Are you not? It's just data. It's just data. It's meaningless until you put meaning to it. But to get there for some people can be tricky, right? And so that can be the real growth. Kind of like when I first started, I'm like, what? That's variability. You got to be kidding me. And I have concern of like, oh, this is not a good thing. But then just, yeah, started to do the work. And then you see the change very, very quickly. Again, it comes back to, we're not trained in our culture to look at these subtler signals in our body. We're not trained to trust the wisdom of our body. Like, I think about my kids who are 7, and they've each been through a gut health kind of thing that had us going to an Ayurvedic doctor and cleaning out some stuff, and ultimately them learning about the sensations of their body. And I remember one conversation with my son around, so, you know, when you have X happen, how does your belly feel? He was 4 at the time and he had a little Hot Wheel truck. And he said, hard, like the roof of my Hot Wheel. And I said, and so then when X doesn't happen, how does your belly feel? And he had his stuffy tiger. And he's like, my belly feels as soft as my tiger. And he goes, and maybe if the X happens, it feels like the cushion that we're sitting on. So he tuned in, like, this is 4.
Wow. Like,
already at 4, he was out of touch with his body, but quickly able to tune in, right? And I remember being stunned that I'm like, I'm teaching my 4-year-old how to feel his body. Like, this is right. But then I got over it. And then he learned. And now he's very, very tuned in to his body. My daughter went through something similar just a few months ago. And she's now in this sort of this place of like, she can feel. And sometimes she just listens. And I don't hold them tight to having to listen. It's just when we see X or Y happen, we're not surprised. It's like, makes sense. This is happening. We quickly learn, whether through the school system, through the way our days work, like we eat at 5:30, we eat at 12. Like, are we really eating when we're hungry? Are we going to the bathroom when we need to? Are we listening? Like, and it's so early. It starts of not listening and the messages that are given to little people and bigger people. So it makes sense that adults aren't really tuned in and they just need some help getting there. And to make that transition from just data as being God to the weaving between data and our somatic experience.
When I hear you say this, it seems to me like probably Indigenous people who lived in close connection to nature may have had a higher skill level of interoceptive awareness. What am I feeling inside? And, oh, there's something outside that I need to pay attention to, and that ability to kind of go back and forth and adjust and recalibrate. But I feel like in modern society, like everything is out. Our senses are out. Our mind is out. It's almost like we aren't even feeling in anymore, and we're just stuck out there looking for answers to why we don't feel well. What you're training your 4-year-old and your 7-year-old to do is to navigate the internal interoceptive awareness and then the external stimuli and kind of move back and forth. And I think that's what we as yoga therapists are teaching most of our clients.
Yeah.
Whether it's their body, their breath, their mental state.
Because so much improves when we can feel, so much can be retrained. And I wonder if when people are saying things are complex, like pain is complex, or this conditions are complex, like I think it's humans are complex. I'm not sure the condition is. And what if we really do come into this feeling sense, because that's where the answers lie. And maybe there's complexity in those layers, but how we teach that connection and that ability to trust, that's where the healing work seems to provide the results that so many folks are seeking. science is showing more about this idea of under recovery. Like that's becoming something of a drumbeat that's starting to get out there. Humans might not like to hear it, but then when they have the experience of what it is to properly recover and what then is possible, then there's a certain group of people that will make the change, I think.
You know, earlier when we were talking about that, allowing yourself time to rest, what it took for me was after that Apple Watch, realizing, oh my gosh, my heart rate variability is so off. I had to break rules that I would have myself for a really long time. Like, you don't lie down during the day. Like, that was like this unspoken rule. Do you know what I did for the hour before this interview? I was
You lay down.
Out because I had gotten up so early and I felt off. My nervous system fell off. And I was like, well, I have an hour. I want to show up present on this interview. So once you let those rules go, that you can leave the dishes in the sink if you need to, you can lie down during the day, you can have entire days where you just stay home and stay in bed. Like, if we can let go of these rules we have for ourselves, you don't have to work out 6 days a week, you know?
But a lot of that comes by listening, right?
Yes.
And walking into this inner world that we have. And I softly and gently encourage / challenge people who might say, but people don't want that. I'm like, it's all how we position it, I think, and where that compelling reason is. Because yes, clearly in each of those scenarios, when I found yoga and then I recognized what was present for me, I didn't know it until I knew it. And then it's like, oh, I'm ready. Right. And so there does need to be a readiness for sure. It's what we get, what maybe is put in front of us and what is suggested, because some people just don't know.
Yeah. It sounds like you work with a lot of athletes. I think it's especially hard for athletes in general, not all of them, but in general, to hear what we're talking about today. That idea of train harder, train longer, you know, it's shifting somewhat. But in general, the athletes I work with, they haven't really bought into this idea of rest is as important as training.
Interesting. And it may be that they need to see somebody that they respect. A story that I sometimes tell my clientele, athletes, but they also are workers. And so they're working 40-hour weeks. They tend to have jobs that there's a certain amount of cognitive load that they're having to work through. And they have 2 to 4 weeks of holidays a year. And they work the 5 days a week. And then they've got the weekends with kids or weekends with the stuff. And when you compare that to an NFL player or an elite athlete of any sort, the duration of an elite professional athlete's career is finite. There's a length of time depending on the sport, unless you're like a total goat, like say Simone Biles, right? So she's going, right? But generally speaking, there's a finite window of time. And then you can feel the depletion that starts to happen. And there's also an off season and there's a competitive season and there's training regimens. Whereas when you look at the workplace, Olympian, the workplace person, there isn't, like, it's 40 years.
Yeah. There's no prioritization.
Right? It's not there. And so sometimes people can kind of go, whoa, but then they might fall into the trap of like, well, then that's just the way life is. And I'm like, actually, no, it doesn't have to be that way, but you can inch your way into more rest. Like you can find your way in, just like, I mean, I'm a great example of that, of just finding my way into more of that. And the more I do it, the more fun it becomes, right? So what started off as a necessity has now become really, really fun. And it doesn't mean that I'm lying around all the time. It's being really, really conscious. So many people think rest is looking at Netflix before going to bed. And the thing is, part of your brain might be turned off, but your brain associated with your vision and all that light going in there, that's totally on. So then now you're going off to bed, how settled and how easily will you drop into the sleep that you need, right? So it's same with doom scrolling, same with like all those things, right? So it's being really deliberate about what you are doing and how you're doing it.
Well, Susie, you have an amazing podcast called From Pain to Possibility.
Yeah.
I want to direct people to. And then this morning, as I was preparing to talk with you, I went to your YouTube channel. I'm just going to pull up on the screen for those of you watching here in the video version of this. So your YouTube channel is Susie, S-U-S-I, Hately, H-A-T-E-L-Y. You've got a lot of subscribers and a lot of videos on here. Do you put one out like every week or two?
Well, you know what? For a long time, I was, and then I stopped. And then we're actually circling back almost to the week that we're recording this. And there'll be a lot more nidras that are being posted. We're going to be adding nidras and we're going to be adding a few more movement practices as we get into 2025. That's going to be a focus for us because rest is so vital, right? And making rest something work really well for people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What else do you have coming up in 2025? I have been so fascinated by your tongue, the power of the tongue workshop. Are you going to offer that?
Well, that's available on demand. So people can take that anytime. A big piece about the movement work that I do stems from this idea of where the pain is not the problem. And so we can be pulled to like explore a part of our body that has pains or symptoms and do all the things around that area. I remember when I ran the one version of the tongue workshop when we had two people in that program and same exercise, and this won't surprise people listening, but same exercise, and one person had migraines release and strain in their head release, and somebody else had their pelvic floor release. And then a bunch of people on the call were like, well, how did that happen? And it's like, well, I don't know because I'm not in their bodies. But isn't that interesting that people, they didn't come into the training specifically for their tongue. They were interested in another way, but they discovered this connection that they were unaware of. So they became aware of something they were unaware of. And the person with the pelvic floor piece had been going to a pelvic health PT and hadn't had that kind of shift in her pelvic floor with the work, but now could then integrate between what was being done at the pelvic health practice and what she now discovered this with the movement practice. So we've got more of those types of things happening. I've been training professionals for a long, long, long time with functional synergy. And recently we've had a real upsurge in people, like non-professionals, like not that people, professional or professional aren't people, but people who are non-professionals wanting to get out of pain. And so we actually split our business. So we now have a site at susiehately.com where we have more consumer-based programming. And a lot of teachers go and check that out because they're like, well, how does she work with the non-teachers, right? And so we've got that happening and that building over the course of 2025 too.
And of course, the other arm of it is that you do train yoga therapists, you mm-hmm. train healthcare providers, yep. people more interested in the kind of professional route.
Yes, so we do have the IYT accredited 800-hour program. And then a whole whack of CEU availabilities with our on-demand programs that I've produced over the number of years. So all of that is available, whether people are looking for rest or improved technical training or digging into their own systems of how to downregulate and move better and feel better and get out of pain, either on functionalsynergy.com or susiehately.com that people can explore. Yeah.
And thank you for putting out so much free information too, that ability to learn, even if nobody pays you a cent. I think that's important too.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure. And
thank you.
Have a wonderful 2025.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Susie, for being here with us today and being so vulnerable to tell the story in real time, what's happening. I think so many of us as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, we kind of want to like put ourselves up on a pedestal and we don't want people to know that we're human and we are dealing with dysregulation just like everybody else, and that the pressures of our lives and the challenges of our lives, we kind of want people to think, oh, yoga solved all the problems and it no longer exists. And if you just do what I tell you in your yoga practice, someday you can be up on the pedestal with me. And that is so ridiculous. And I'm so glad we didn't go there. And really happy to be two women who really know a lot about yoga, yoga therapy, heart rate variability, how to have better interoceptive awareness. And at the same time, we're willing to admit that the pressures of life are a lot. They're a lot. And that we are going through it just like everybody else. And that we struggle too. And that we go through periods where we're kind of unhinged a little bit or don't have that internal anchor. And then we have to use our yoga tools to come back online and kind of get back into the routines of life and feeling stable again. So I am going to continue to watch all of the wonderful videos on Susie's YouTube channel, and I'm going to take that tongue workshop very soon. Some of you know I have a special interest in the human tongue. So, Susie, thank you for all that you gave today. It was a pleasure to meet you and to be with you. And I wish Susie and all of you a wonderful start to 2025. Thank you to our guests today. And as we complete the podcast, I just want to remind you that we have Monday night clinics where we have an entire community come together to do gentle postures, breath work, and yoga nidra meditation every Monday night. We have a theme for the month. And all through 2025, we have all of our themes mapped out. You can go to www.theoptimalstate.com and look on the top menu bar where it says the Monday Night Clinic. We invite you to come and be part of our community on Monday nights. All right, I hope to see you there. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.